The Morning Brew Podcast with Jaffe and Razor, sponsored by Berkshire Bank Home Lending, where you borrow matters. Well, whether you are a player, a coach, a broadcaster, or just a fan, you get up on a pretty morning here in the Boston area, a little chilly, a little non-May-like temperature-wise, but a nice Sunday morning, Mother's Day. You're heading in to watch your favorite team take on the Carolina Hurricanes in Game 4, and you're saying, you know what, just have another good game. Just another good game, a must-win game as far as I was concerned. And, you know, you go in there and you say, it's going to be all right. Just have a good game, shift by shift, all those little things. And then at about 11:27 or 11:28, you hear that your top defenseman, one of the best young defensemen in the entire National Hockey League, will not be in the lineup due to, wait for it, COVID-19 protocol, something that we really haven't had to deal with lately. That's right. Charlie McAvoy not going to be in the lineup, but it doesn't matter. Your Boston Bruins gut out a win 5-2 over the Carolina Hurricanes as we welcome you into Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor, presented by Berkshire Bank. This episode also made possible by our friends over at Fazenda and Fazenda Coffee, over at Tresca. Go check them out at Tresca North End, by Max Pro Hockey and Bay State Brewing. Razor, you watched the game. You were there. You had the day off from having to BS next to me and Dale. I'd say this one had a little bit of just about everything. Just the only thing we didn't have was a big scrap in this one.
Yeah, it was great. It was great viewing. The Charlie McAvoy omission really put everybody on edge, and what can you say about this group, right? The next man up and all the cliches that everyone uses, but these guys battle through so much. They have so much compete, so much determination when their backs are against the wall, when things don't go their way. It's impressive. That was an impressive one to find a way the way that they did, and the way, quite frankly, I mean, how bad Carolina looked. What a bunch of dogs.
Right. So we'll get to that. They actually, pretty obvious, didn't help their own cause in this game when I think early in the second period, they scored that first goal with what, seconds into the second period, 33 seconds in. And you're thinking, I'm not saying you personally, but aren't most people thinking, oh shit, here they come. And in fact, what happened is they went the other way. But let's go back to the Charlie McAvoy announcement. We had gotten rumbling at about 11:26 that something may be up. We didn't know what that meant. And that there was some, I don't know if it was social media, internet, whatever, rumbling. And next thing you know, I'm turning around, Razor, when, you know, Sean, our producer, says 3-2-1, and I'm looking to see if he's coming on the ice. So the viewers got to see my best side, you know, my backside, as I'm looking around, and I don't see him anywhere. And I'm like, oh, man. And I'm not going to deny, when you hear a minute later, that's when the Bruins sent out the announcement, COVID-19 protocol. I'm saying to myself, are you freaking kidding me? And I'm not going to lie, there was that moment of, there's no way they can win this game. Because you figured, right, that Carolina was going to take it to them, even with Charlie in the lineup. I mean, when I mean take it to them, I mean really come out with a ferocious, ready-to-bounce-back type thing after Game 3. And then I'm thinking, all right, they don't have Charlie, or they have Hampus Lindholm. Like, you're talking 46 to 50 minutes of bona fide big-time ice. And I wasn't being negative. I'm just being honest. I'm thinking to myself, I don't know how they're going to do it. Did you have a similar type of feeling?
I did initially, and then I was in the perfect place in the arena to get over it quickly, because I'm sitting in the alumni box with Nifty and Chief, and Nifty literally is like, well, this is part of the deal. This is how you win Stanley Cups with these guys out. No big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll still find a way, and if they don't, then they didn't deserve to win anyway. So that was the sentiment within the – no one cared. No one thought twice in the alumni box. All the old guys were like, oh, that stinks. And the 500 texts that I got saying, who's even testing for this right now? Why are they testing for this? What is going on? Is anybody in the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs testing for this thing right now? That was kind of the other trend up there. But yeah, like I said, so I got over that. I thought about it quickly. And like I said, the old guys were all, well, this is the way it goes.
And I get that. And I don't disagree. And by the way, a couple of minutes into the pregame show, I don't want to say I moved past it like, oh, no big deal anymore, they're fine. It was, I think, the same mentality. They have no choice. So you just go out and you play. Guys get injured all the time. I think part of the thing that made it feel even more impactful to me was the fact that we have when's the last time we heard he'll be out due to COVID? That was the other thing. And I think that struck me as well, despite the fact, mind you, that there's a shitload of people that I know right now that have COVID. You know what I mean? Like, I know, unfortunately, too many people I know. But you know what I mean? Like, we hadn't heard that in a while. And I was just thinking, like, really? Like, how are they going to do it? And then probably about 8-10 minutes into the pregame show, you know, then you get on with your biz, and maybe similar to what you did when you're up in the boxer. I think it's probably a good time, as you bring up the texts that you got, you know, why are they testing for COVID? And they're testing only if you're symptomatic. So what does that mean? I'm going to guess, and Razor, I don't know anything with regard to Charlie McAvoy right now, but I'm guessing it was a lot more than just an allergy type, you know, a seasonal allergy type thing. Because there's no reason, if you have the sniffles or if you have some sinus, that you have to, at the NHL, the protocol says you don't have to. But if you're sick, if you're showing significant symptoms, I think you have to test then, Razor.
Yeah, so that's it. It's to the point. It's fascinating. And you hope, I guess, he's not that sick, because that would be the only way that you would expect anyone to be going out of their way to go find a COVID test at this time of year.
I think the teams have a few extra sitting around. I think they have to. And I think I know they're bound to it. Especially, I don't know a single thing. If he has a fever, for instance, you have to test. It's part of it. It's part of it. So they test. He's positive. He's out. Now the protocol is this. We'll just get this out of the way. If you continue to show symptoms, it's 5 days. And then after that fifth day, you can get out if the symptoms have gone away. On the other hand, there is an out where if symptoms go away sooner, you can, if you need to produce two negative tests within 24, it have to be 24 hours apart. If you can produce that, you can get out before the 5 days. So again, there's,
and that's, you know, NHL mandated, or
that's NHL. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
I will fully admit I'm 99.
So that doesn't mean he's missing 5 and 6 then.
Correct.
Necessarily. Automatically.
Right. If I was good. A betting man, which you know I am not, maybe Sammy P would be willing to put a little, you know, something on it. I would guess, just a guess, that he's out for 5. That's my guess, if anything. I mean, unless you're not, unless he's not showing symptoms tomorrow, you know, because then he'd have to produce a test tomorrow and then another one on Tuesday. So it's a little confusing, because do you test every day, even if you're showing symptoms? Meaning, could it be a false positive and then go away? And let's just hypothetically say the symptoms are allergies again. You know, a lot of people are suffering from those. I don't know. I'm confused in the sense of I don't really, like, I'm 99% sure I have it right. I've been told a couple of different things. This is what I've culled together, buddy. And this is what I'm told. Two scenarios, 5 days with symptoms. After the fifth day, you can be out. As long as you don't have a temperature, I guess. And then otherwise, if you can produce two negatives within 24 hours, you know, you can then test out.
Got it.
So that's where we're at. Mm-hmm. All right. So enough of that, because he's out for this game, game four. Bruins get off to a start again that was anything but, I mean, maybe they were a little buckled. Maybe they were, you know, a little, how are we going to do this? And maybe not admit it overtly, but wondering, wait, what's going to happen here without our big guy on the back end? Because they didn't start great again, Razor, in this game.
No, they got this. This was their worst start by far of the three games or the four games now. They weren't able to get the puck deep. They were turning the puck over horrendously in their own zone, and it caused them to take penalties. I mean, I know I'm assuming we're going to get to it again. The refereeing is like banana land. It is gone to such a far level with these guys. I 14 penalties every game. It's like, holy smokes. And the Bruins were on that side of it in the first. Carolina got the other side of it, the second and third. But in the first, the Lazar interference and the neutral, like, holy smokes. And
that was the one play call that I said,
what are we doing?
You know what we haven't gotten to yet? We haven't gotten to playoff officiating yet. And we have not. We're at the, we're going to call more or less everything we want to. That's kind of a penalty, but marginal. But you know, the old let them play more, you know, unspoken rule seems to be out the window, Razor, so far.
I know, and that's why all these games are 5-2. Anyone questioning why there's no close games, there's no overtime, it's because there's 16 penalties in every game. And but I digress again. So it affected the Bruins though in the first period. They're chasing their tails a little bit. They did get momentum from those kills. They did a really good job on those again tonight, this afternoon. And yeah, they looked a little, you know, unsure, little tentative, which we know you can't play tentative against this Hurricane team.
Yeah. Well, we discussed in last morning, Brew, about what would they do for the lines again. You know, we weren't sure. Bruce went back to the top line with Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, can control the matchup completely. Now, I don't want to get on a tangent here, but maybe later we can talk about if they're going to break up that line. Would they dare break it up, Razor, heading into Carolina due to the matchup game? And that seems like at least a good topic to discuss. But he doesn't here. He keeps the fourth line together. He shifts right wings. Well, at least he puts Craig Smith up with Howell's line, and he moves Nosek onto the side and DeBrusk down with Coyle to do some different changes. Anyways, I mean, they didn't get off to the kind of start they want. Pesci scores a goal on a 4-on-3.5. I thought there was a little mix up, or, you know, Jake DeBrusk was in the middle of the ice. I don't think Pastrnak got back enough either right there. Pesci scores the goal, 1-0 at the 14:06 mark. A very big goal in this game as well. It came just 2 minutes later when the top guys are on the ice. And, you know, this was great from start to finish, even though it was not as beautiful as the Pastrnak goal later in the game off the faceoff play. This was beautiful from a grinded out win the battle thing. Bergeron, little faceoff battle. Marchand gets involved and whips the puck towards the net from the right side. And then Pastrnak corrals it behind the net on his backhand, throws it to the front. And there's Bergeron, who gets it high. It seemed like a goaltender in Antti Raanta, who I got to be honest with you, bud, a little surprised that he started. I thought that they'd start Pyotr Kochekov again. But Rod, I think, was more comfortable with the veteran in this road game, putting him in there. Anyways, then Bergeron puts it through the five hole of Raanta, who looked to his right. You know, I think he felt that Pastrnak was going to maybe try and bring it to his forehead. And instead, David just spun on his back end and whipped it to the front or to the side of the net there.
Great to get those guys going. And you talked about the face-offs. Bergeron 70% tonight. Huge, massive difference. And that'll be part of my looking forward, you know, with the matchups. Can he win enough face-offs in Carolina? Because he hasn't. win the faceoffs. They just have so much, especially that line. When that line wins offensive faceoffs, we saw it twice tonight, but there's just opportunities galore. It turns into a penalty so often, a power play opportunity so often. So those guys did a great job grinding it out. Another huge goal, because you feel if they go into the period down 1-0, yep, just a completely different feel in the building. It was really quiet at that point. That 1-0, that 1-1 energized everybody, and it seemed to give the Bruins confidence again to be able to get on the board that quickly, right in behind the goal from Carolina.
Yeah, but with that said then, so it's 1-1 after one, and then a goal 30 seconds into the second period. I mean, that should have been a watershed moment. At least I almost expected that to be for the Carolina Hurricanes. And again, not that the Bruins were done, but I'm just saying, isn't that what you think of a team like Carolina getting that goal from a guy? I think Jordan Staal, even though that was just his first goal of the playoffs so far, I think he's been fantastic, Razor. He has been everything, not just a captain, but a power forward, a defensive guy. He has had a major impact, at least in the series. So they score the goal early in the period off of a classic cycle, used the behind the net. I did think that I also had a little fear watching that, you know, the Bruins were chasing and Brown was on the ice and he looked to be a little hesitant where he wanted to go there.
Coyle did a horrible job in front of
that.
Coyle.
It was all
Coyle, yeah.
But three guys went to one side at the first blush on the play. And then when they moved the puck back behind the net, everybody had to reset. And I don't think any of them reset well.
No, it was an ugly one. And I think, in hindsight now, you recognize that was just a one-off bad play of the night. That was their mistake. Beyond that, they were very solid in their defensive zone. But at the time, it's the opposite. It's like, oh, boy, they're falling apart here. Here goes their defensive game. Where's Charlie McAvoy? Fortunately for all of us in attendance, it was the other way around, that it was just their mistake that every team makes at least once or twice a night. They paid for it, certainly 33 seconds in.
So here's something to back up your point. After Staal scored on the first shot of the second period, it was 11-6 shots in favor of Carolina. Then if you transfer forward, and I don't have the exact number of the exact time in the game when it's come up, but it was 11-6. And then after that, it was the Bruins at one time had outshot them 20-11. I mean, the Canes didn't have a shot for a long time, and the Bruins ended up putting, I think it was 14. If my numbers are correct, 14 straight shots at one point. It was crazy.
That it felt like it too, right? It really felt like it. The Bruins were able to tilt the ice, and again, so much credit to them, because they could have easily been deflated. They could have went down, but again, it's the opposite with these guys. They ratcheted it up another level. It's impressive.
All right, so the Bruins tie it up on a Jake DeBrus goal off to the left side or the right
wing. Goalie interference. There's only four games. Four games we could have. Massive controversy.
So the low referee does the right thing. He calls the goal. Does it cross the line or not? Called it. That's all he's there to do right away. If the puck goes across the line, emphatically, he was there. The back referee, though, I was watching for it. He right away skated over to the other guy as if to say, are we sure about this? Was there any goalie interference? He didn't wave it off. The back referee didn't, but he did say to him, what did you have here? You know what I mean? That's that discussion. But again, the call on the ice they kept with as a goal, because I don't think the low referee saw enough to make a decisive goalie, interference, hitting the pad type call on DeBrus. But then Carolina elects to challenge it. Now, in hindsight and seeing it numerous times, I was looking at it and being like, I don't know if it's a great challenge. But at the time, Razor, I was thinking it was 50-50, because I get confused sometimes by these, these calls, and the league takes a look at them in the situation room. Finally, I saw enough replays where I felt that both Pesce and DeBrus make contact with the pad of Antti Raanta, but also because the puck is loose after you get the ruling from the league, from the rule book too, that once it's loose, they determined it was a rebound type opportunity, you're allowed to go after the puck. If the puck was on the pad, you couldn't push the pad with the puck into the net. And I think that's a little thing that made a lot of people confused too.
Yeah, it made a lot of people confused. This was my best text that I got from another goaltender person. Mm-hmm. If that's a goal, we are finished. Exclamation point. There's no point of playing goalie anymore if that's a goal. And that was the sentiment. DeBrusk pushed his pad. And yes, I understand the puck was loose, right? The puck's loose. But if you take that literally, that means you could just go in, push a goalie's pad while the shot's coming in because it's loose, right?
No. It's based off the rebound. So if there's a shot, that would be a goalie interference call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Based on that. You can't do that. But if there's a puck that's in there and it's based on their determination that it's a rebound and it's loose, you are allowed to go after the puck. And I think then that allows incidental contact. Now the question becomes, what do you, not you personally, but what do you deem as incidental contact? Yeah. And I do think, I mean, did you see the replay enough to see that Pesci also made contact with his goaltender's pad?
He did, but it's all DeBrusk's stick that makes it. It's Raanta gets spun to his left where DeBrusk is pushing on his left pad. So there was enough gray area. The Bruins got away with it, but I would suggest that had that gone the Bruins' way, we would be screaming and yelling from the rooftops that they pushed his pad. He got out of the way. He got spun around like it. But I've seen goals that were more interference called goals in the last week as well. Like this is mm-hmm. the other issue that the league's had all season long, and the explanations are always different. But if it was black and white, where did he take away the goalie's ability to stop the puck in this situation? It's a yes. That would be, because put it the other way, if Jake DeBrusk doesn't touch Raanta's left pad, mm-hmm. does that puck go in?
Likely not.
So
I get where you're going. But because the puck is loose, if you swat at it, if it's not deemed intentional, and while that's confusing, because if it's there and he swats at it because the puck is there, it's loose, you're allowed to the playable puck in the crease being loose, you're allowed to go after it. And if therein lies, then that's where the incidental contact happens. Mm-hmm. Then that's a live puck, and that's a clean play. And I think that's where it's confusing. Is that your point is very valid about the definition seems to, or you know, you get different readings on things pretty regularly. I said to the guys, I said to Dale and Barry, I'm not confident this is going to be counted. I watched it three times, I wasn't confident.
Yeah, and it just goes to like the letter of the law, and it to your point, it's the letter of the law. You can have it a goal. You can have it a goal. But as a hockey player, you're looking at it that, you know, if it's your goalie, anybody but your goalie, you're probably saying that should have been interference.
Rule 69.7 for anybody there out there who has a rule book or wants to go online and the digital one, virtual one, or whatever it's called one, and you want to read about it, you can. Bruins tie it up. Rod Brind'Amour and his team go shorthanded again because they get the penalty, you know, the extra penalty, which nothing happened on that goal. That's not true. Sorry. Late in the third period, that ends up coming through, and that they pay the price, you know, for that one. We also have the double minor for high sticking after that on Sebastian Aho, which was a scary moment.
Ooh, that's given close to the eye.
Oh my. And anybody that has played and has worn, you know, wears a shield or worn, you know, that's the kind of scenario when Aho stick gets caught under the shield can do more damage than almost wearing no mask. because we've all been cut in the face, right? I mean, I don't know if you have being a goalie, but I've been cut in the face a handful of times. I've had pucks hit the air all over it. But if they get a stick under the visor and it stays in there, that can be very damaging. That can be awful. We've seen guys have that happen to them before. But Patrice got very lucky where it caught him just on that very tender, that very thin layer of skin just outside the right eye. I'm rubbing my right eye here, and this is a podcast, so I'm the schmuck doing that. But if you're watching on the YouTube channel, you know what I mean. But anyhow, scary as shit. Patrice tried to stay on the ice. He tried, you know, he did the old Rocky, cut me, Mick. Come on, you know, glue me up. And he couldn't get it. You're not allowed to play with an open cut.
No.
You're just not allowed to, bleeding. And Patrice was trying to get it all glued up, but he didn't. And then the guys come out to start the third on a 5-on-3. They don't technically score on a 5-on-3, but it was. What did you think of the five forwards on that power play?
At that point, with McAvoy out, they'd already blown the 5-on-3. We just glossed over that because the game was so great. But that felt like a dead zone there too. Holy,
the passing was not good.
Yeah,
Razor, how bad was the passing on that 5-on-3?
They didn't open anything up. There was no, like, David took a wrister into the pat. Like, ew, there was nothing there. And to that respect, I like the five forwards at that point. All right, this is like, that's the series. That's the season. Mm-hmm. You have to score on the next 5-on-3. You give up two of those and have nothing to show for it at home in game four down. You're kaput. So I like the aggressiveness. I mean, Cassidy punched all the right buttons today. There's, you know, he put DeBrusk on the power play. Then he scores the controversial goal in the second period. Puts the five forwards out. Marchand sends a BB in there. Mm-hmm. To get the 3-2 lead. It was the good job by the coaching staff.
And I like Bruce's post-game comments when asked about it. A right shot to a right shot is a cleaner pass. You're cupping the puck instead of opening up your stick. And they didn't have another right shot to put back there. They're not going to put Connor Clifton back there, or Josh Brown back there. Although I'm sure Cliffy Hockey has enough swagger to say, F it. Give me the puck. I'm just going to hammer, you know. Yeah. But you put Charlie Coyle back there. It ends up good.
Sorry, it also comes down to David doesn't like it either. He does not like that left-handed pass. Like, where he angles, where he shoots from, he does not. He never hits it hard when Grizz passes to him. Just the way that's a different angle. And I don't think David likes it very much either.
I would agree with you on that. It's a different look when you're seeing a guy passing from, because a lefty's going to be passing obviously from out to the side versus a righty who's going to have the puck more in front of him. Mm-hmm. And you get a different spin on the puck when it comes to you. And it's just a different, as you made a great point about set, but it's also a different feel when you mm-hmm. connect on that pass, the spin factor, the way that it comes off the stick. And that's what a guy like David's looking for. Meanwhile, it ends up being Marchand, who, as you said, puts a BB past Antti Raanta, who likes to play deep in his net. Razor, is that a residual from his days with the New York Rangers, working with Allaire perhaps there? Because he's not the biggest guy. He's 6 foot. Like, you know, he's not one of these Markstrom monsters at 6'5", 6'6", but yet it felt like he played deeper in his net.
He will play deeper. What he's very good at is addressing where the shot's coming from, and he'll take his 3 or 4 inches then. So similar to King Henrik, he'll take those inches while the shot's coming in, always moving into the shot. That's why he's good, because he has good hockey sense, good reads, Raanta does. But that, in that situation, you're playing the 5-on-3, so you're playing extra deep because you need to keep everything in front of you, all those seam passes. You know, he made two good saves over on David because he gets there very quickly because he's playing deep. If he's playing out on the shooter, he's got further to go across the crease. So he's playing for those plays. And like I was just saying, typically he'll take a step. But with Marchand's shot, he wasn't able to get out. He didn't get his feet set and ripped it over the shoulder.
Yeah, it was a great shot. All right, so Marchand scores on that 5-on, we'll call it 5-on-3. I mean, it was there, because right at the end, that's when it became a 5-on-4. 44 seconds into the third to make it 3-2. And then David Pastrnak at the 5:41 mark of the third period off of a gorgeous set play. We've seen him. They must have five or six set plays off of a faceoff. you know, usually they prefer to take faceoffs on Patrice's strong side, which is the right wing side, because of the backhand set there that he can get up the faceoff. And then usually we see an accelerated right D point man coming down the wall to start things up, usually McAvoy. But this time they're on the left side razor, and they do the below the bottom of the circle. They do the low set play, and it's an absolute, I mean, it is, you want to talk about a symphony of player movement there in a matter of 5 seconds or so. Marchand comes in, spins his way, you know, gets his way into the circle as they're both crossing. Marchand ends up being on the inside of the circle, so they switch, so they're each on their offsides, Pastrnak and Marchand. Brad comes in, and as he cuts across, it's that David slides below. He comes below the bottom part of the faceoff circle, and Brady Shea's chasing him from the get-go. And as soon as he gets by Brady Shea, who had been marking him from, I think Shea was either on the bottom of the circle or just up near him along the wall. As soon as he gets by Shea, he turns around and faces Brad, who then puts a pass before Shea even knows what's going on. Shea keeps looking at away from the puck. He doesn't know, maybe he doesn't even know where it is. And then David just waits artfully, skillfully, till the puck is just far enough to the right past the sprawled out Antti Raanta for a gorgeous 4-2 goal.
It's such a thing of beauty. And like you said, it's so well orchestrated. The timing of it is so masterful. It's so fun to watch. And the timing of that in the game when everyone was just starting to get going and you felt like the Bruins still needed one more to really enjoy the third period, they pounded it in. What I'd really like to see and have a breakdown of is what that looks like when they don't win the faceoff. Like, to know that that was their plan and where they go on like a 50-50 puck. Like, just to recognize how they recognize when it's going to work and when it isn't going to work. Their ability to sense that so quickly is what makes that even more impressive, because that's happening bang, bang, and you have to readjust so millisecond on the fly.
Well, you know what that's called, that adjustment? You know what that's called, buddy? That's called your Zamboni buddy. It's called Patrice Bergeron, because he stays in the middle and he covers everybody else's ass. It gets back. Well, because if Brad's going to come in off that left side faceoff, off the right side, he's coming in to support the play. If he doesn't get the puck, he's probably going to sift back, either force the play, I'm guessing, for whoever has the puck, or he's going to maybe slide back towards the middle. Pastrnak's going to come probably low to pressure, and then Bergeron's probably going to back up. He's going to back up to be the third guy high off of the loss. But they won it, and it looks so easy. I mean, you could run that in practice with very minimal resistance and not have it look that good.
Well, that's what I mean. Like that the timing of it couldn't have been better if it was a 5-on-0.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been better. Crazy. So good. So good.
Then Razor, Brad Marchand, to end the scoring, scores an empty net goal, 19:25, and puts a ho-hum 5-point night.
I had no idea. I literally had no idea until I turned the Toronto-Tampa game on tonight that he had 5 points. I've been home hanging out. I had no idea he had 5 points. What a night.
And we're going to talk about in a minute coming up after we talk about our great sponsors, that there may have been a moment in the game. We talked about this on Nesson that perhaps lit the Marchand fuse just a little bit more to get the time bomb that is Brad Marchand going again. Now he's about a couple of games going. So that's your recap on the game. Bruins win there 5-2. Overall, Razor, the shots were 28-26 in favor of the Bruins. They lost the faceoff battle, 46% for the Bruins, 54% for the Canes. You did mention that Patrice, though, has had now not one but two good games in a row after two 40% games in Raleigh. So you make a very good point. When we get together next to work coming up on Tuesday night, how will that impact being on the road, the faceoff game? The penalty minutes, 18 for Carolina, 10 for the Bruins, 37 hits for the Bees, 29 for Carolina. And then another big telling stat, 15 blocks to 6 in favor of the Bruins. And a lot of those blocks came in the first period and later in the third. And the Bruins have been putting their backsides on the line these last two games. We talked about the heroics of Derek Forbert the other night. In this game, there was a plethora of players. Lazar, Nosek come out. Carlo, I think, had six. I don't have it in front of me. He had a good game. We'll touch on him in a moment, too. So that's your statistical breakdown in the Bruins win. Let's take a moment right now to thank our sponsors who helped make this Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor possible. And the first one let's talk about is the place just not that far from the Garden. I guarantee you Tresca on Hanover Street was jumping. In fact, this is no bullshit, none whatsoever. I'm downstairs after the post game, Razor. Go to the Team Gear store to get something for a buddy. We're down there. And a wonderful Bruins fan came by and says, "Hey, I love your guys' podcast. Thank you. Thank you. We love your support." He goes, we're going to Tresca tonight. He had a French-Canadian accent. And I drove in behind a car from Quebec with a Bruins flag on it. You knew it was going to be a good day when, you know, you have a Quebec car coming out with a Bruins flag. And he said, "We're going to Tresca. We took your recommendation. We can't wait." I said, "You're going to love it. Say hi to Chef Rich. See if Raymond's there. I don't know if Ray's there or not, back in town or not. But go check out Tresca in the North End. Go to TrescaNorthEnd.com. You can check out their menu. Make a reservation there. Perhaps you can get table 77, the balcony. It's overlooking a table for two overlooking Hanover Street. We need it to get a little warmer though, Razor, I think right now. We're back to fall weather. You go there and have a great drink there. They have a wine list, craft cocktails, espresso martinis are a must. Trust me, my wife has had a couple of them there. And another great thing about the food and everything at Tresca is there's a lot of it. They serve you a beautiful amount, a healthy amount of your favorite Italian foods. They got all different type of specialties. And you know what else? Their sauces. They can be bought at Market Baskets, Whole Foods, Roach Brothers, Big Y, and some other small markets in the area. And you can buy them even at Tresca. So go to Tresca on Hanover Street in the North End. Say hello to Chef Rich. Tell them that the guys from Morning Brew, tell them Jaffe and Razy sent you over there. Go get yourself some great coffee, too, at Fazenda, fazendacoffee.com. Use the URL fazendacoffee.com/morningbrew. Order $45 or more and get yourself a gorgeous, beautiful, big-time Morning Brew mug. Every day we see more and more of them posted on social media. We love that support. Thank you very much. I think they're almost out of them over at Fazenda. It's awesome.
Awesome. I love it. Love the mugs.
Mugs have taken off again, and they're going to keep taking off. And you know what? Listen, try the different blends over at Fazenda. Absolutely. And if you'd ever just need to get one quickly, go over to Whole Foods. That's where Fazenda is sold locally in the Massachusetts area at many of the Whole Foods here. FazendaCoffee.com/morningbrew. We'd like to thank Max Pro Hockey. Max Grachev runs some awesome, unique, fun, and very, very impactful hockey camps for your youngster, boy or girl, of all ages. In fact, he's got summer camps. He has individual training, group training, and in-season even team training to help develop players in season. And lastly, Bay State Brewing out of Worcester, 112 Harding Street in the Canal District. Go to baystatebrewing.com. Check out all of their distinctive handcrafted beers that they have. And if you go to Worcester, check them all out, taste them, or enjoy them with some food. Remember, it's right next to a hockey rink where Two Sheets are. That's where the Bay State Brewery is. And it's also just two blocks from the WooSox new ballpark. So if you're going to go down for a ball game, make sure and stop by and say hi to our friends at Bay State Brewery, 112 Harding Street in Worcester. All right, I want to fly through a couple of things here, buddy, before we wrap up this Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor. Best guess, if you were Rod Brind'Amour. I was a little surprised they started Antti Raanta in game four. If only because, I don't know, I didn't think anything that Kochetkov did in game three was per se his fault. And I felt like he's got a lot of, you know, attitude to him. Would you go back to Raanta in game five, or would you go with Piotr with the youngster?
I think you go back to Raanta. I kind of heard that they wanted Raanta to go in game three, but he told them he has a sore neck and didn't play. This guy is a 100% or nothing goaltender, will not go through much. So that talks to what happened in game two and with Pasternak. So I think they really want him to be the guy. So the way he played in game one in Carolina would give me pause to switch up at this point. If they lose, then probably back to the Russian kid.
I don't know. I'm not sold on it.
I think it's a positive for the Bruins.
But exactly. I think it is too. I think it's a positive for the Bruins if he plays. I mean, I'm not taking a shot at Antti. I'm just saying I think the Bruins can get to him. He's not as big. He plays a different style. I think it allows for the low plays too. He's deeper in the crease on the power play. It gives the Bruins, who have found some success at times, lower on the power play. It feels like, Razor. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I wonder. I don't know Antti Raanta's body language well enough, but I don't know if he looked as fluid perhaps as he did in game one. So maybe he's still a little tentative from the incident in game two. That is something to keep an eye on as well. I want to go through just a few players on the Bruins before we talk about Tony DeAngelo. Okay. And his stuff. I said earlier, I thought Brandon Carlo really played a good game. And Brandon has had an up and down season this year. He had to come through in this game, Razor. He had to, without Charlie McAvoy. And the line ended up being, for Carlo, 1932, 4 hits, 5 blocks. I mean, right there, I'm like,
yeah, done. Good. Done. Bruins won. Right. That's the line every night the Bruins win.
Yeah, and he played 334 shorthanded. He actually had 21 seconds on the power play too. But he ended up having 3 attempts, 2 which hit the net. I just thought his compete level was freaking good. I really thought it was good. I thought it was the kind of thing that you needed out of him. I like Derek Forbert's game again. He had 5 hits. I really like Connor Clifton's game. He had 6 hits. Cliffy and Forbert, the last 2.5 games or so, mm-hmm. 2-3, have been. You're getting everything I think you need to out of your third pair, Razor.
1000%. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And a couple. I thought Jake DeBrusk, excellent game. He was named third star in the building. I thought his give a shit level was excellent. Excellent. How about that play in the first period where he stuck with it, almost scored a goal? Which was it on Slavin that he took it to, shorthanded? I think I can't remember which team it was.
It was
Shea.
It was Shea because I was thinking about something. It was Shea. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but either way, that and for me now, like it's to the, you know, we talked so much about it with Jake, and now I'm like I believe he's bringing it every night now. Now there's no. Like I'm back on Team Jake, where it's like this is automatic. He's gonna give, you know, all he's got, no matter who he's playing with, and the body language and the happiness and the compete is, it's a thing of beauty. It kept him in the series. To be honest, he's been that important.
He was one of 8 players only, Razor, to have a shot on goal in this game for the Bruins.
That's crazy.
The Bruins,
crazy number.
They had 2 players, Erik Haula and Tomáš Nosek, that had 1 shot each. So that means they had 6 players that combined for the remainder 26 shots on goal. Patrice had 5, Grizzlick had 3, Marchand 5, DeBrusk 5, and David Pastrnak had 6. Top heavy. Yeah. Top heavy. That's something that has to be, you know, really watched in game 5. So those players I thought played real well. Fourth line again, even though if you're into the analytics thing, you're looking at natural stat trick, fourth line's numbers weren't pretty, but I thought they did their job. But the middle 6 to me is a little concerning. It is. You got to figure that out. They need Haula to get back to being that legit second line center. Taylor Hall at times was kind of, you know, I'd like to see him more with the puck on his stick too.
Yeah, well, not quite. Excuse me, quite as sharp. They need those guys. They need them. They're going to need them in this best of 2 out of 3. They need those guys to chip in. And I think they're doing a good job defensively. I'll give them that. I'll give Haula that. I think Haula's,
Fair enough.
He's not checking in offensively, but he is being reliable down low. He's blocking shots. He's trying to be physical. But
and he was good on the faceoffs. Yeah, he was good through 3 games. He was their top faceoff guy.
Yeah, so I he's contributing there, but the reality is that those guys need to score for them to win a 7-game series.
All right, I want to wrap it up with this. You've been in so many games. You've seen, you've listened to guys. I know as a goaltender, you see it differently from back there, meaning way back there or on the bench, you know. But you've played against a lot of guys I know that take it upon – they're not afraid to express themselves on the ice and to be, you know, they're very intense and they have a lot of confidence and all that yada, yada stuff. Did Tony DeAngelo's actions, his making fun of Brad Marchand, of pointing out that he has a large nose, of his yapping, did his actions have an impact negatively in the game, you think, for Carolina?
No, I don't think so. I think you that's, don't. No, I think that's pretty standard.
Do you think he woke up Brad Marchand? I think he did. Meaning, I know Brad was good in game three, but I think Brad just said, screw you, after he started making fun of him. I mean, you can look at it. I mean, after he was chirping him and, you know, it was just kind of like Brad said, screw you, here we go. Now, I know it's not one against one, but, you know, he can be a wild card. I think the Bruins should absolutely look to engage him intentionally to see if they can get his wires crossed, just like teams have done to Brad.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're going to have to go at him. They'll give him a few extra face washes and try and get in his kitchen. But to be honest, that I was, if I'm a Carolina person, if I'm Rod Brindamore, I'm more concerned about the lack of emotion from the other 19 guys, not Tony DeAngelo. At least he bought in. At least he was competing. I thought there was a lot of non-compete from that team today. They had a massive opportunity to go up 3-1. At either one of these games in Boston, they showed nothing.
See, I thought that they, especially in the first period, I thought that some of their guys showed some good compete. I did. And again, I go back to the stall goal 30 seconds into the second. I thought the freight train was starting to get on its tracks. You know what I mean? But then the Bruins were able to stifle that a bit. And then we started seeing some frustration from Niederreiter. Svechnikov. Like, Svechnikov was trying
Pesci.
Pesci, yes, yes.
Guys on the back end. It's a playoff series now. Here we go.
Svechnikov had 9 hits in that game, too, when he dominated, right? Mm-hmm. He was trying. In that game, he had 5, he was credited with 5 hits in this game. In that game, though, the hits were coming because he was moving his feet and he was huge. He was bigger than big on that ice, you know? These games, I felt like he was hitting because he felt he had to. And he was trying to chasing. Exactly. I felt the same thing for a guy like Niederreiter as well. I don't even know how many hits he had. I'm looking up.
What did Aho do? What did Teravainen do? Where are those guys?
You're good. It's a valid point. It's a very valid point. Aho in particular, I thought he was more involved in game three when he was jostling and jousting with Patrice. I felt like in game three, I was looking back at some of the game razor. It was almost like Aho was saying, well, you're not going to get Jordan Staal, but I'm going to show you that I'm as tough as him in a different, you know, I'm going to be a pain in your ass. And I felt like by this game, he wasn't doing much at all in this game. Hampus Lindholm could be back. He could be back. Oh. He skated Sunday morning, and I was told Friday morning that he was doing really pretty well. Like, he looked really good.
Good.
I would not be shocked if he does not. If he plays, I mean, on Tuesday.
Okay, that's good.
And that would be really, really good. You know what's good as we wrap it up? Let's make it better than good. Let's make it great. Although, wait a second. Our RC sent us a fan question on Instagram. Let's get this one quickly. From Adam, I'm going to say the last name and I'm going to screw it up mightily. Whatever. Adam J. How can Tony DeAngelo toss his stick and not at least get a penalty? Did you see that at the end when he tossed his stick?
Yeah.
That would have been, they would have awarded the goal if the stick hit the puck.
Yeah.
And that's therein lies, I guess that's why there wasn't a penalty there, because it didn't. If you throw your stick at the puck with the goalie in the net, the referee's arm goes up, that's a penalty shot. But with an empty net goal, if there's any contact made whatsoever with the player or the puck, it would have been awarded the goal, and that's what takes the penalty. so to speak, the place of the penalty. So yeah. Thank you.
And I didn't have a, I mean, again, I didn't take, I don't think anyone took offense to it. I thought it was kind of entertaining. He was mad. He's frustrated.
Yeah. I just think they go at him. I do. Yeah, I think they, sure. I think they make it hard. Let's say thank you to our moms and we'll wrap it up. I hope my mom is listened to this entire show. Lorraine is the best, and she loves the Bruins, grew up in Boston, grew up in Winthrop, loves the Bees, has a great time with them, loves watching us on our show, Razor, and will you know, all the time, and never misses an episode. So hopefully she stayed to the end on this one. It's a little longer than some of the others. So, Mom, I love you very much. Thank you for being the best mom that I could have had. And I'd love to say also to Victoria for being the best mom to our children. So thank you, honey, for all that you do. So that's how I want to end it. You want to say something to your mom? Does your mom listen or no? Does she refuse to? Do I talk too much for her?
I think she likes flipping on YouTube just to see my face, especially probably yours at this point now. It's part of the routine. I'm not sure if she would have made it through 50 minutes of hockey talk, but yes, like you just said, my mom's the best, always so supportive. So, wouldn't want to spend a day without her. So she's the best. Aaron's the best. I'm very lucky to have great women in my life.
And we know as well that RC, our guy RC, the man behind the screen, the man that controls putting it all out there, has a great mom in Jackie, who just had a hip replacement recently. Just a couple of years ago, if I remember correctly, she became a fanatical Bruins fan. RC can tell me if I'm getting this wrong. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that RC is such a big Bruins fan. And then Jackie has become, you know, gonzo for the Bruins. And I think she's hoping to go to the Bruins game on Thursday night, despite having, well, I'm not saying one hip, but one hip that just wasn't replaced and the other one that was. And because Ryan has his graduation from Northeastern on Friday night. So that would be awesome. So Jackie, thank you for being a great mom. I know Ryan loves you very much. And I know that he's very proud of you, and I think he chuckles at the fact that you want to go to the Bruins game on Thursday night right there. So to all the moms out there, thank you for all the greatness that you do. To everybody else out there listening, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Bruins win 5-2 over the Carolina Hurricanes. The series is tied at 2. No Charlie McAvoy, no Hampus Lindholm in game 4. The Bruins say, screw that. We're about team, not just a player. They come through with a really good, better than good effort. And again, we will talk to you after game 5 on Tuesday night. And in the meantime, have a couple of coffees. I think after this one, you know, you could use it, and maybe something in the coffee too. Thanks again to Berkshire Bank and all of our sponsors. Everybody have a wonderful day and enjoy your coffees.